Welcome to AM Best Audio.
It's 5 years since the Solvency II regime came into force for insurers and reinsurers in the European Union. Now the European Commission is moving forward with a review of the system that will shape its operation over the coming years. I'm Richard Banks with AM Best TV. Joining me to discuss how possible reforms to Solvency II will affect insurance and reinsurance companies is Tony Silverman, Director at AM Best, who's the author of a new Solvency II report. Tony, thanks for joining us. In your report, you examine EIOPA's advice to the EU as part of the Solvency II review. Can you give us a bit of background to the review and tell us what's wrong with Solvency II? Why does it need changing?
Well, I think the first thing perhaps to say is that this review is happening under an obligation from Solvency II legislation that the EU Commission has to comply with, and they're under an obligation to start a review. They actually had to start it in 2020. And that was done by requesting advice from EIOPA, the EU regulator. And EIOPA delivered that advice a few weeks ago, I have to say, in documents totaling 1,500 pages. I think the Commissioner would need advice on the advice. But I think to a great extent, perhaps what's happening is just that there really are some significant subject areas to tackle. And that's why we're sort of where we are and why we wrote the note. And the question really is why is that the case? And what we say in the report is that the Solvency II regime is a particular compromise between theory, practice, history and politics. There's quite a hodgepodge of influences. It just isn't perfect, and there's plenty to look at in the review. And to give some examples, large parts of Solvency II assume a sort of theoretical, idealised, perfect markets and very low risk-free discount rates for future claims payments and other cash flows, all quite harsh on available capital. But on top of that, there's quite a mix. There's the incorporation of practical experience in the form of the volatility and matching adjustments. And then it added to that, there's a long-term interest rate which is set by regulation at a level which has looked too generous to be realistic. So it's all a particular selective mix of theory and practice. And then there's transitional measures which bridge the gap with previous regimes. So chunks of historical reserving practices are brought into the reserves number. And then also there's an interface with solvency regulation in other jurisdictions, which we're sort of familiar with in the UK in the form of equivalence rules, which can be subject to a variety of influences, but which end up importing figures from other regulatory regimes into Solvency II. And that would include the US and Bermuda, some really significant numbers. It can be a very important effect, along with actually Australia and Brazil as well. So the theory and others, but it means that this theory, practice, history and politics mix does mix up quite a few things. And I guess the question is sort of what are they really going to do? Well, EIOPA's advice looks at a wide range of things, discount rates, risk margins, allowance for all sorts of things. There's a change to the capital requirements in the standard formula for interest rate risk is one thing that they look at, and that one's completely up in the air. It would have a big effect if you allowed for the risk of negative interest rates, a very political decision, which EIOPA have sort of separated out from their other advice. But just to wrap this one up, I mean, discount rates and risk margins are two things that look reasonable bets to see some changes, and we discuss those in more detail in the paper. We don't know what they're going to do, but overall, we think they will make a start on moving the discount rate and risk margins to a more economic basis. But I think the story is likely to run and run. And along the way, I think you'll actually accumulate more history and politics into the regime whilst you're trying to rectify things from the past. I think it means that off and on, we might be talking about upcoming reviews of Solvency II for a long time. But that's sort of why they are where they are.
Yes, you can never escape history and politics. You touched on the UK in your answer there. You mentioned the UK. Of course, the UK is no longer part of the EU. But the Solvency II review does still have implications for EU insurers and reinsurers. What does your report have to say about that?
Well, yes, Richard, we talk about that quite specifically, and this one is largely about the risk margin. The UK industry has publicly said that the Solvency II risk margin is too high. From what I think the UK authorities and regulators have said pretty much the same thing, and it looks that way to us. But at the same time, there are concerns that if the UK were to depart too far from Solvency II, then that makes equivalence more difficult. What it looks like to us is that EIOPA's proposals include quite a big reduction themselves in the risk margin, so that removes equivalence concerns if the UK, in its own review of solvency regulation that's in process now as well, if it goes on to look at lowering risk margin substantially. I mean, it may have been that the equivalence concerns would not have been allowed to limit what the UK does anyway. But it is beginning to look now as though they're just unlikely to be an issue in any sense, at least on that risk margin point. So there is that implication in potentially freeing up the UK to do what it wants to do.
Interesting. And it's clearly a very topical theme at the moment. Your report also looks at EIOPA's suggestions for harmonising insurance guarantee schemes across the EU. Can you tell us a bit about why that's important?
Yes, I mean, I think this is a fascinating topic, if I may say. But the insurance guarantee schemes, so thanks for the question, they pay for failed insurers. It's the Financial Services Compensation Scheme, for example, in the UK, and there's, in most European countries, they have a similar thing. But they do operate, in fact, very differently. There are some it's a whole subject in itself, but there are some very important differences. And that means that the levies on insurers are different in each country. And these differences reinforce the way each country is likely to operate quite separately in the case of an actual failure. And we do have to envisage what happens in that case. And that sort of happens as they seek to manage the domestically borne cost of failures. And it is, as it stands, born domestically within each country. So as stress scenarios develop, regulators will try to ensure that their own subsidiary is solvent. And they'll always be on the lookout as things develop to stop funds leaving the local subsidiary, if they can, in a stress scenario. So straight off, if you've got fungibility potential for the fungibility of capital to be compromised in that way, then it is something we're interested in as a rating agency. It could sort of diminish the effectiveness of group supervision just at the point when it matters. Although I don't want to paint the wrong picture, and to be clear, group supervision is very real and effective in the EU, and you can see that working in the way groups have moved capital up to the parent holding companies. But it's all not perfect as it stands until policyholders sort of share a group fate in a failure or liquidation scenario. And until that's the case, individual countries are likely to look after their own policyholders, as I've mentioned. And you also have to remember that there's actually very little harmonisation of the wider bankruptcy laws in Europe. So there's an element of every country for itself just potentially developing in a case where regulatory solvency buffers are, shall we say, history in a particular case. And basically, it's just much easier to have effective group supervision if all your policyholders are in the same country. So the way I'd put it is there's, if you like, an intimate relationship between guarantee schemes, the behaviour of supervisors in stress scenarios, fungibility of capital, and ultimately the effectiveness of group supervision, certainly in those scenarios. And there was one other thing which I think is worth mentioning. We actually reference it in the report, because we do believe that the variation in guarantee schemes is an economic policy issue. For example, Germany is unique in the particular respect that across the examples quoted in the EIOPA's material in their 1500 pages, where the part where it talks about this, Germany is unique in having 100% protection with no upper limit, which is what it has for life policyholders. I should say, though, it's not in the EIOPA's data. The UK is another very unusual example of this. And I guess you probably don't have to be an economist to see that the behaviours that result from 100% protection are not just different in, potentially not just different in measure, but different in kind from 80, 90 or even 95% protection. Policyholders just will not potentially not be concerned with solvency of whatever insurer they use, which you might say is an economic or irrational maybe, but it remains one way a country can go if it wants to on this subject. However, it does mean that it would be difficult to have harmonisation of guarantee schemes in the sense of, for example, having all insurers paying the same levy. Indeed, that's not what EIOPA is proposing. They can't and couldn't and aren't proposing that. The detail's another story, perhaps, but the Commission has to tread a fine line, and the EIOPA's advice is more focused on what the schemes pay. So I did want to reference the subject in the report, and we do believe there's a lot more to be said about these schemes. But what we can say is that harmonising guarantee schemes is a missing brick in the wall of group supervision. It's of insurance groups across territories. It's a difficult one. It comes at a late stage of getting group supervision across countries to work or to work well. And that's why we say it is the fact that they're tackling this is a marker of a maturing group supervision regime.
Tony, it's a report that's packed full of insight. Thanks very much indeed for joining us today to talk us through it a little bit. For more of AM Best's views and analysis of Solvency II, and to view this latest report, please visit ambest.com. For AM Best TV, I'm Richard Banks.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.